This is Audible.
Beautiful Exile, Book 4 in the Sparrow Falls series. Written by Katherine Cowles. Narrated by Samantha Brentmore and Sebastian York. Prologue. Age 11. Dad pulled a card from the pile, studying it like an archaeologist, trying to determine if it was an ancient artifact or just a knockoff. Mom and I shared a look, our own determining going on. He slid the card into the fan he held and reached for another, pausing. Looking up, he glanced first at Mom and then me. His dark brown hair was just a little rumpled, not the perfect slick back look he wore to court each day. And he was dressed in jeans and a polo shirt, instead of one of those fancy suits. But it was the mischief in his green eyes that I loved, the kind that said he was up to no good and enjoying every moment of it. I hadn't seen it much lately, not with how busy he'd been with case after case stressed to the max. And maybe not seeing it as often made me love it more. Dad held up the card, fluttering it for a second before discarding it face down.
Gin.
He cheats, my mom accused, but there was only humor in her words, and the way she looked at him spoke of nothing but love.
I do not,
he shot back, stiffening his spine in mock affront. He laid his hand down for us to see. He'd smoked us, 3 aces, 3 nines, and a 4 card straight in hearts. I slumped back in the overstuffed leather chair, tossing my cards onto the coffee table. Definitely a cheater. That's 3 in a row. My dad chuckled as he gathered the cards to shuffle.
Maybe this is the hand you'll trounce me in.
At least you've won once, Mom said to me. I haven't won a single hand. We could always switch to Scrabble. You'd kick all our ass. I halted at the look from my mom. All our butts. Mom's warning expression softened, a hint of humor playing around her eyes. Nice save. And I say Scrabble after this hand. This was always the way it went. Gin Rummy, where Dad would win, then Scrabble, where Mom would take us both. It was no surprise, given all the time she spent surrounded by books. Everyone who lived in our suburb outside of Boston seemed to have some charity they were hooked up with. Mom's was the library. It was her favorite place to spend time, just like the one in our house was her favorite room, which was why we always held game night in here. To me, it was too stuffy, all the dark wood paneling and floor-to-ceiling shelves. At least during the day, sunlight from the garden and surrounding woods poured in through the windows. But at night, it felt a little stifling, like the walls and all the books were closing in around me. How about if I win this next hand, I get to go call Claire? I asked hopefully. Mom sent me a look that told me my chances of that were slim to none. Sheridan, it's family night. Give your poor mom her one win. Dad chuckled.
She's 11. She's getting too cool for us.
Don't remind me, Mom said, sniffing exaggeratedly. We'll be dropping her off at college before we know it. I rolled my eyes and pulled my knees to my chest. I think you're safe for a while. I gotta get through middle and high school first. A phone rang. My dad shifted and pulled the device from his pocket. Mom sent him a look that would have had me rethinking what I was about to do, but Dad just went right ahead and answered.
Hey, Nolan.
A pause.
Sure, I've got it here.
Another silence.
Let me pull it up, and I'll call you back.
Dad moved the phone away from his ear and pushed to his feet. Robbie, my mom said, her voice managing to somehow be both soft and hard at the same time. It's family night. You promised. Her gray violet eyes, a color she'd passed on to me, pleaded with him.
Nolan just needs some information about a case. It'll take 5 minutes.
But it was never 5 minutes. Dad would hole up in his office for hours when he got a call or someone stopped by. I got it. He loved being a judge and took it seriously. But the meetings and late nights seemed to be happening more and more. 5 minutes, Mom muttered, shoving her blonde hair back from her face.
Blythe,
Dad said, his voice going hard.
Don't start.
And then he was striding out of the room. I could picture the path he would take, down the hallway and then the stairs, stopping in his office with its massive fireplace and more dark wood. When I had a house someday, it would be all light and windows, no stuffy rooms with wood paneling and wallpaper. I glanced at my mom. She sat in a leather chair that matched mine, staring at the spot on the sofa where my dad had been, as if it could give her the answers she needed. Dropping my focus to my jeans, I wrapped a fraying thread around my finger. Mom hated these jeans, hated that I wanted a pair with tears and rips in them. I pulled the string tight, cutting off blood flow to my pointer finger. Are you and Dad gonna get a divorce? My gaze flicked up, wanting to see her reaction. I was pretty good at knowing when she was lying. Her mouth would flatten out, and little lines would appear like parentheses around it. Her eyes flared in surprise. No, of course not. Why would you think that? I pulled the string a little tighter. You guys fight a lot now, and Dad isn't home as much. Mom sighed, leaning forward and taking my hand. She quickly unwound the string from my finger and rubbed blood flow back into it.
He's had a lot going on with work lately, but he's trying to fix that, to be home more.
I nodded, not completely convinced. Are you okay? Her entire face changed, her expression gentling.
My sweet girl.
She pressed a kiss to my temple. I'm just fine. I knew that was a lie. She wasn't herself. Tonight was the first glimpse I'd gotten in a long time of how things used to be. But maybe she'd meant that she knew we'd get back there, to how things had been. I couldn't imagine being with someone for as long as my mom and dad had been together. They'd met her first year at Yale when Dad was a junior. They'd gotten together then and had never broken up. When Dad graduated from law school, he'd proposed. There had to be ups and downs when you were with someone for that long. The only problem was that I had plenty of friends whose parents had decided the downs were reason enough to split. The doorbell rang, the chime's three-toned noise echoing through the old house. I couldn't help but stiffen. If another of Dad's colleagues interrupted game night, I knew Mom would be pissed. She squeezed my hand.
Sheridan, we're fine. I promise, nothing is going to change.
God, I wanted to believe her. Dad's muffled voice sounded from downstairs, but an unfamiliar sound cut it off. It was somewhere between a crack and a pop, like a firecracker. But I highly doubted Dad was setting those off in a foyer full of priceless art. As my mind tried to put the pieces together, I watched the blood drain from Mom's already pale face. I'd always been a mix of them. I had Dad's dark brown hair, and my skin had just a hint of tanned olive in it like his. But my eyes were all Mom, that gray-violet that could go stormy when I was mad or upset. Mom's skin was like ivory silk, the kind that meant she always had to wear sunscreen. But it almost looked gray now. Another firecracker sounded and Mom leapt to her feet, running for the phone discreetly tucked into a corner of the library. She lifted it to her ear, finger already punching a key on the pad. But then she stilled.
Dead.
She patted her pocket and cursed, a word she never used, flying from her lips.
I left my cell in the kitchen.
Her words trailed off as she stood frozen for a moment. A beat of one passed, then two, three. When she moved again, she flew across the room, grabbed my arm, and yanked me up. What? Mom clamped a hand over my mouth, cutting off my words. She lifted the pointer finger of her other hand to her lips in a shh motion. Panic flared to life, zinging through my muscles like some sort of foreign energy. She grabbed my arm again and hurried into the hallway. I heard voices below, footsteps.
Where the hell are they?
A voice snarled. Mom's fingers trembled around my wrist.
You've been paying him too much. This house is too big.
Another voice said, a hint of humor lacing the words.
Well, I won't have to do that anymore, will I?
The first voice asked. Mom hurried down the hall, abruptly stopping at one of the panels. Her fingers ran over the seam until she found the spot she was looking for. She pushed on the wood and the panel popped open. There were hidey holes like this all over the house, everything from secret closets to a dumbwaiter. It had made for the best games of hide-and-seek growing up, but this was something else. Something bad. Mom pushed me into the space, where a tall duster and some other cleaning supplies were stashed for our housekeeper. The space was so shallow, I didn't think she'd be able to close the panel with me inside. I grabbed her arm. Mom, what are you—
Stay here. No matter what you hear, do not come out. Do you understand me?
Mom! She wrapped her arms around me and hugged me tightly.
Love you to the ends of the earth.
I gripped her sweater, fisting the soft cashmere. Get in with me. Mom peeled my fingers from her arm and shook her head.
I can't.
Footsteps sounded on the stairs. Mom! I croaked.
Not a word.
She quickly closed the panel. The space was so tight it felt like I could barely breathe. It didn't smell like the rest of the house in here. The scent of dust and cleaning supplies filled my nose. And it was dark, pitch black, except for the tiny sliver of light from the seam in the wood.
Blythe,
a voice grated. There was a smoothness to it that felt like a lie, the same way the lines around my mom's mouth gave her away. I pressed my face to the wood trying to see, and could just make out the hallway right in front of the panel, the antique rug that lined the gleaming hardwood floor, the oil painting opposite me. I stared at the brushstrokes as I waited. Some looked angry and forceful, while others were peaceful and calm. It wasn't something I'd ever noticed before, even though I'd passed the painting every day for my entire life.
What are you doing here?
My mom tried to keep her voice calm, but it had a shrill edge.
Where's Robert?
A tisking noise sounded.
Now, Blythe, don't play stupid. It doesn't suit you.
My mom went quiet for a moment before speaking again.
What do you want? Whatever you need, I'll gladly give it to you.
I'm so happy to hear you feel that way. What I wanted was for your husband to do what he was instructed. Instead, he tried to renege on his promises. And Blythe, I don't like it when people go back on their word.
I could hear my mom's breaths. Short, ragged pants just a few steps from me. She was so close, I should have been able to reach out and touch her. Squeeze her hand in the secret way we used to silently tell each other, I love you. But I couldn't. Not now. It was as if an ocean lay between us.
Whatever he took from you, I'll make sure you get it. If we go to the computer, I can transfer it now.
Blythe,
the voice cooed.
That's so kind of you to offer, truly. You always were so much classier than your other half.
The man spoke as if he knew my parents, but his voice was completely unfamiliar. I searched my memory for something, anything that would pull a name free, a face, but there was nothing.
Please, my mom begged. Don't hurt us. We have a daughter.
A few steps sounded, muted as if the man were moving closer on the carpet.
And where is that daughter now?
My whole body began to tremble. It was like I'd been struck by lightning and these were the aftershocks.
She's at a sleepover. A couple of girlfriends from school.
My mom said, her voice trembling like my body. No one spoke for a beat or two.
You wouldn't be lying to me, would you, Blythe? I don't take kindly to liars.
Tears tracked down my cheeks as I again reached for that loose thread on my jeans. I wrapped it so tightly around my finger that I knew it likely drew blood. I'm not lying, Mom whispered. The man made a humming noise, and a shadow covered my mother. I pressed my face harder against the door seam, trying to see better. The tip of a single shoe moved into the frame. I couldn't take my eyes off that sliver of an image. Leather, dark brown with intricate stitching. It formed a shield of sorts with a lion. Words in Latin were above it, but I couldn't make out the exact phrase.
You know, I believe you, the man said. Yours were more respectful than Robbie. But I'm afraid it's too late. What he owes me is a blood debt. But that's been paid. Unfortunately, because of your traitor of a husband, you'll need to pay too.
The shoe disappeared from view, and another of those firecrackers sounded. Only now, I knew it wasn't that. It was something so much worse. My mom jerked, disappearing from my line of sight for a moment before stumbling back into the frame. She clutched her chest and then crumpled to the floor, blood spreading and seeping through her light purple cashmere sweater, the one that had felt so soft beneath my fingers. Black spots danced in front of my vision. Breathe. I needed to breathe. I sucked in short bursts of air. It was all I could manage. My mom's gray violet eyes, our eyes, went wide and then froze, unblinking. Her hands went limp against the antique carpet, the one she always told me to be careful not to spill on. But she was the one spilling now, her life force draining onto the dark mix of woven colors. A shadow slid over her body again, and then a man moved into the frame. He looked like he belonged, like someone who lived at one of the properties a few acres away, someone we'd see at the club or church. He wore khakis and a button-down shirt, his light brown hair just a little shaggy and unkempt. But his hands showed he was different. The black gloves he wore, the gun in the hand closest to me. My whole body trembled and I felt liquid sliding down my legs, soaking my jeans.
Check her,
the other voice said, the one that had taunted my mother, the one who'd ordered the spilling of her blood, the one with the Latin lion shoe. The man in front of me crouched, careful not to step in the blood. Mom's blood. He pressed two gloved fingers to her neck and then turned, looking at the man I couldn't see.
She's gone.
My knees nearly gave way. Gone? My mom. The black dots were back, almost taking me under.
Good riddance,
the other man spat.
Search every room in this house. I want to make sure that brat really is at a sleepover. If not, she's dead.
His voice began to fade as he stomped down the hall, but his words reverberated in my ears. Sleepover. My mom's story was saving me, telling the beautiful lie that I was gone. Only it wasn't the gone my mom was, or my dad. My chest burned as I slid to the floor, my body contorting to fit the space. But I couldn't stay upright anymore. All I wanted was to slip into that gone, right along with my parents. 1. Arden, present day. I stared at the painting, frustration swelling, swirling in inky tendrils as I assessed the image in brushstrokes, the angry beat of heavy metal blaring from the speakers. It wasn't working. Something was missing. Perhaps it was too similar to pieces I'd done in the past. Or maybe it felt just the slightest bit false. I worked in various mediums, metal for sculpting, oils for canvases, even the occasional pastel or charcoal piece. It was my way of processing and dealing with the darkness, letting it come and then expelling it onto some surface. Some would think it was healthy. The foster family I'd ended up with on the opposite side of the country certainly did. But the truth was, the darkness and I had never really come to an understanding. We constantly battled. But I never won the war, even now, at age 25. Which was why my workshop, nestled in the mountains of Central Oregon, was currently ablaze with light. It was my way of casting out those shadows, the same as I did with my art. Ironically, while my fear of the dark had remained, my creativity came alive at night. Maybe it was the darkness's way of keeping its hooks in me, tempting me to see if I was brave enough to face it. I stared harder at the canvas. The image was haunting, I'd give it that. Dark, tunneling trees beckoned you to come closer. But something was definitely missing. I let out a growl of frustration that had Brutus lifting his head from where he lay on the dog bed in the corner, his gray ears twitching. The massive King Corso was always checking up on me. He was another weapon in my arsenal against the darkness. "I'm fine," I grumbled, heading to the sink on the far wall. Pouring some solvent into a dish, I began the process of cleaning my brushes. The routine was a meditation of sorts, one of the few I could muster. Because sitting on a pillow while soft music played wasn't really my thing. I needed something active, punctuated by the raw anger of hard rock and various kinds of metal. I found it in art and jiu-jitsu. Both were gifts in their own way. Ones given to me by the family I'd found in a place I'd least expected. After months of foster care and then witness protection in Boston, they'd finally placed me far from that world and with a family who knew nothing about Boston society or judges who had taken bribes to throw cases a certain way, ultimately costing their family everything. As that familiar mix of anger and guilt swirled in a noxious stew inside me, I took a steadying breath and remembered where I'd landed. With the Coulsons. A family that was a mix of blood, adoption, and foster bonds, but closer than any I'd ever known. But maybe it was the element of choice that made it that way. Nora Coulson's choice to continue to bring children into her home after losing her husband and one of her sons in a car accident. But not just any children. She took the toughest cases, the most broken ones. So it hadn't been a surprise that I'd landed on her doorstep, barely verbal and scared of my own shadow. But she and her mom, whom we called Lolly, had brought me out of my shell and helped me heal the best they could. Just like they had for everyone who came across their threshold. They had Cope and Fallon, Nora's birth children, her adopted son Shep, and Rhodes, Trace, and Kyler, her fosters. We were a patchwork family full of different threads and fabrics, but it created something that never would have been otherwise. Something more beautiful. But that didn't change the fact that I sometimes felt like I didn't fit. I was just a little too odd. Not especially good with people. I was better with my paints, metals, animals, and sparring. All the things that didn't need words. I dropped my brushes onto the towel, spreading them out to dry. My fingers were still twitchy since I hadn't gotten the outlet that painting provided tonight. My gaze flicked to the massive windows along my workshop's back wall. I could just see the beginnings of the sun peeking over the ridge of the Monarch Mountains to the east, and knew it would cast its rays across the golden faces of Castle Rock before long. The view from these windows was breathtaking, and one my brother Cope had given me out of generosity, a home and a studio on his massive property. He liked to couch it as him needing a property manager since he spent so much time on the road with his hockey team, but I knew the truth. He wanted to make sure I was safe, sequestered from the world as much as possible, behind fences and gates with cameras and alarm systems. It didn't matter that it had been almost 14 years since anyone had tried to harm me. My siblings would always want me safe. Laying out the final brush, I arched my back to loosen the muscles. I'd need a good soak and some Epsom salts later. The curse of being on my feet for too many hours straight. But first, I needed to move. I glanced at my watch, just a few minutes past 5. My gaze moved to Brutus. "Want to go to the gym?" Brutus let out a deep woof and was on his feet instantly. He loved Kai's mixed martial arts gym, not because of the building itself, but because of all the attention he got there. My lips twitched. You're going to be bummed when you realize it's too early for anyone else to be there. Brutus simply panted in response. I grabbed my gear bag from the beat-up leather couch along the far wall and switched off the music. The sofa was storage bed and sometimes dining table all rolled into one, since I spent more time here than in my small guest house next door. But it was everything I needed, and it wasn't like sleep came easily in an actual bed. Ducking into the small bathroom, I quickly changed into workout gear and headed for the door. Brutus was at my side in a flash, my mostly silent companion. As I headed outside, the automatic lights flicked on, bathing the gravel parking area in light and illuminating my most prized possession, my 1979 red Ford F-150 pickup. Her exterior had seen better days, but her guts were perfect. She was the first thing I'd bought myself with the proceeds from my art. Thanks to the hefty trust fund my parents left behind, I could have bought a vehicle when I turned 16, but I couldn't help seeing it as blood money. The reason my parents were no longer here. Sure, some of it had been hard-earned, coming from my father's job as a lawyer and then a judge. But when the FBI dug into my parents' case, it was clear that someone had been bribing him. They just didn't know who. The FBI commandeered those funds, but I couldn't help but wonder if more had flown under the radar, or help but feel like the bribes had tainted the rest of it. So I'd left the money in the account and never touched it. I only knew how much was in there because I'd had to move it from one bank to another a few months ago. The amount had been staggering. So staggering, I'd gotten physically ill afterward. But keeping it apart from my life now had been a gift, because earning the cash I needed for Wanda made the purchase even sweeter. My brothers were always on me to sell or fix her up, but I thought her dents and rust spots gave her character. Sliding the key into the lock, I opened the driver's side door and motioned Brutus inside. He leapt in with grace and power, things that kept me safe, right along with his years of personal protection training. Brutus had been a gift from my eldest brother, Trace, the most safety-conscious rule follower of all of us. But given his upbringing, that wasn't a surprise. Just like it wasn't a shock that he had ended up as the sheriff of our entire county. I started Wanda and she purred to life, the rebuilt engine humming perfectly. My headlights cut into the early morning darkness, illuminating roads I knew by heart now. And with those headlights, the dark didn't feel so ominous, more like a blanket of quiet. I craved that just as much as turning my beloved music up to 11. Silence or deafening chaos, there was no in-between for me. The benefit of heading to the gym at 5 a.m. was that the streets were completely clear. Even though it was August and the height of tourist season in Sparrow Falls, this was too early, even for the hikers. So I made the drive in 2/3 of the time it usually took me. As I pulled into the parking lot behind the building on the outskirts of town, more lights flicked on. Yet another way my siblings took care of me. Kai had put extras in the moment I started coming to Haven in the early morning hours or late at night. Shutting off the engine, I slid out of the cab and glanced at Brutus, who waited patiently, but his quivering muscles gave him away. My lips curved into a half smile, one that would have turned full had my wasted night at the easel not still hounded me. Komm! At the German command, Brutus leapt out of the vehicle and stuck right by my side. I should have had him on a leash. If Trace saw us now, he'd write me a ticket faster than I could blink. But what he didn't know wouldn't hurt him. My gaze automatically scanned the lot as I walked, feeling the switchblade I always carried pressed into the pocket of my waist. Some might think me paranoid, but safe and wary was a hell of a lot better than dead. As I reached the gym door, I punched in the lock's code. My skin was already humming with the need to move, to feel the contact of my fist against the punching bag. Sparring would have been even better, the give and take of going up against someone else. But Kai would have murdered me if I'd tried to get him out of bed for a workout before the sun rose fully. I stepped inside, flicking on the lights to illuminate the massive room. The space was a mix of black and gray, except for two walls covered in elaborate murals I knew Kai had painted himself. I could study the intricate designs in their vibrant colors for hours and not get bored. He was an artist, and while his medium and aesthetic were so different from mine, it only entranced me more. I understood why people traveled from all over the country, and even the world, to have him ink permanent pictures on their skin. Pulling my phone out of my bag, I ignored the endless stream of notifications and texts and moved to my music app instead. I opted for something to drown out the noise swirling in my head. The moment the attacking riffs spilled through the gym speakers, some tension bled from my shoulders. I moved through my warm-up routine of jumping rope, then pulled on fingerless MMA gloves for the portion of my workout I was dying for, the heavy bag. Its weight was exactly what I needed. Something strong enough to take whatever I unleashed. Something I couldn't hurt with all the anger and darkness still living inside me. Rolling to the balls of my feet, I lifted my hands to a guard position in front of my face. I gave the bag a few testing jabs before giving myself over to the full force of my strikes. I lost myself in the music and movement, the meditation that was mine and mine alone. It was one of the few times I could be fully me without judgment or worry. One of the two places I could let loose everything that lived inside me. That otherworldly state and the single-minded focus that caused my distraction meant I didn't hear anything until Brutus let out a low warning growl. My heart skipped a single beat, but that was all I allowed it to do. One tiny moment of fear and weakness. My fingers curled around the hilt of my knife, pushing the button to release the blade. I whirled, pressing it to the stranger's neck, freezing him in place. When I was sure of that stillness, I looked up, 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 into the face of the most beautiful man I had ever seen. But I'd learned once before that looks could be deceiving. You never knew what lay below the surface. So I kept my blade pressed where it was, as the man's hazel eyes widened in surprise. "Who the hell are you?"
2. Lincoln. God, she was fucking gorgeous. She had a wild, powerful kind of beauty. The kind you could never control, the type you could never cage. I'd stood in the shadows like a creep watching her. The way she moved, her long, dark brown ponytail swinging with each punch, her tan skin pulling tautly over lean muscle. She was on the petite side, but you'd never know that, given how much force she put behind her blows. It was clear the woman had training, and the fact that she currently had a blade pressed to my carotid told me she wasn't afraid to use it. Amusement was my first reaction, that the tiny powerhouse was so full of fire. She pressed the blade harder against my skin, not enough to slice me open, but enough to prick my flesh. The sting took hold the same way her beauty had. "I asked who you were," she gritted out, her gray violet eyes flashing. The fierceness there had all amusement fleeing from my system, because there was only one reason someone defended themselves with such ferocity. They'd been hurt before. "Fuck." I slowly lifted my hand, revealing a key ring with the Haven gym tag I'd picked up yesterday dangling from it, one coded to let people into the gym any time after 6. "New gym member." The woman didn't show any signs of retreat. Her bewitching eyes simply narrowed on me, looking for all my secrets. "It isn't open yet." I kept my hand where she could see it, not wanting to risk further injury, but also not wanting to frighten her more. I wanted to kick my ass for that as it was. "I was told it opened at 6. Her gaze flicked to the large clock on the wall, and then she cursed, finally pulling the knife away from my neck. "Of course, Kai's late," she muttered. So she knew the owner. An owner who happened to be the brother of my best friend, the one who'd gone on and on about the best place to train in Sparrow Falls. A prickle of something unfamiliar slid through me. Were the two involved? No part of me liked that idea, which was ludicrous given the fact that the only things I knew about this woman were how quickly she could pull a knife and that she looked like a walking temptation when taking on a heavy bag. The massive gray dog next to her let out another low growl. Her gaze flicked to him.
Peter Eugen.
She spoke as easily as if she'd been born speaking German. For all I knew, she had. The dog eased, but still watched me carefully. I had a feeling he'd lunge if I made even one wrong move, but I was glad she had that. She watched me closely as she slowly closed the switchblade and stepped back. She wore leggings that hugged every inch of her lean, muscular legs, and a black tank top that dipped just enough to hint at what was under it. Something that was none of my business. But as my gaze swept over her, I noticed something else. Her tan skin was dotted with something. Paint. Gray, black, deep purple, and blue. The pattern had no rhyme or reason, but I found I wanted to search for every last speck of color. She cleared her throat, annoyance evident in the sound. My gaze flicked up to her face and the swirling irises that had held me rapt a moment ago. Those gray-violet orbs were siren's eyes, ones that could cast a spell and make you crash your ship against a rocky shore. One of the paint splatters on her cheek fluttered as she scowled.
"What are you staring at?"
"You aren't going to apologize for nearly cutting my jugular?" I challenged, trying to shift the conversation from my fast-growing obsession. The woman arched one dark brow at that.
"You're the one who broke into a gym without permission. You're lucky you're still breathing."
Those siren's eyes flashed a brighter violet as she spoke, and I thought I fell just a little bit in love with her fire. "Vicious," I muttered, but there was only admiration in my tone. Though I don't know if it can be considered breaking in when the door was unlocked and I called out, but it's hard to hear over this noise. Annoyance flickered across the woman's features as she bent and snatched a phone from the mat. She tapped the screen a few times and the music cut off.
"It's not noise, it's Cradle of Filth."
My lips twitched. "You said it, not me." She rolled her eyes.
"It's the band's name."
"I think calling that a band is a stretch."
"Tomato, tomato,"
she said, then winced, heading for a stack of towels.
"Sorry about your neck."
I moved to follow her as if she'd cast some sort of spell on me, but the gray beast stepped into my path, baring his teeth. "Is your dog going to rip out my throat?" The siren chuckled, and the sound had a husky tone that wrapped around me, causing all my nerve endings to stand at attention.
"Not if you stay where you are,"
she said as she grabbed a couple of paper towels and crossed back to me. She glanced down at her dog, grinning at him.
"Freund, Brutus."
The moment she spoke the words, the tension in the dog's muscles eased, but his gaze stayed fixed on me as if he didn't trust me yet. "Brutus knows German." The woman shrugged as she handed me a towel.
"That's how he was trained."
"Guard dog?" I asked, curiosity peaking as I pressed the paper towel to my neck. A hint of wariness slid into her expression.
"Personal protection. Lots of people have protective dogs around here, ranches and all."
But that hit like a lie. A person didn't bring their ranch dog into town if they weren't worried about something. I had the bizarre urge to push for more, to learn all this woman's secrets. That wasn't me. I'd built an empire through patience and tenacity. I didn't rush. Didn't let a single soul know I was eager for something, because they could take advantage. And I'd learned the hard way never to let someone know what I really wanted or how much I cared. The woman headed for a duffel by the shelves stocked with gloves, jump ropes, and other equipment. Swinging it over her shoulder, she straightened.
"Enjoy your workout. Try not to steal anything, even if it would serve my brother right for being a lazy ass."
I stilled, my hold on my keys tightening. "Your brother?"
"Kai. He owns the place. He's also notorious for sleeping through alarms."
Kai, as in Cope's brother. And if Kai was Cope's brother, then... hell. My siren was my best friend's sister.
3. Arden.
I hated how my hands trembled as I climbed into my truck. That tiny flickering motion gave me away as I twisted my key in the ignition. I'd moved fast, my training and instinct kicking in, and that was a good thing. I could have ended the too handsome for his own good man in a single heartbeat. His face flashed in my mind. Dark brown hair, just a little wild and unkempt. Stubble coating a strong, angular jaw. Hypnotic, gold-green eyes. He hadn't looked like a killer, and it turned out he wasn't one, just a new gym patron, one who probably thought I was more than a little unhinged. My fingers tightened around the wheel, making the leather creak and groan as embarrassment flooded my system. More than 13 years. Yet it sometimes felt like I was still that broken little girl who'd arrived on the Coulson's ranch, scared of her own shadow. But I wasn't. I knew how to protect myself now, keep myself safe. If that meant people thought I was a freak, so be it. I reminded myself of that all the way home as the sun rose, casting glittering pink and gold across the landscape. There were already a couple of vehicles at Cope's place, and I knew it was because he was headed back to Seattle with his girlfriend Sutton and her son Luca. A pang lit in my sternum. It wasn't that I didn't like solitude. I did. It was simply that, after all they'd been through in the past month, I liked the reassurance of knowing they were safe. Especially Cope. When you almost lost someone, it took a while to trust that they weren't going to fade away in front of your eyes. And when you saw someone you loved disappear into the gone, it took even longer. I flexed my fingers around the wheel, forcing them to relax slightly as I turned toward the guest house. I knew sleep wouldn't find me now. I had too much brewing after the encounter at Haven. Instead, I opted for a shower and coffee. Once I'd cleaned up, caffeinated, and dressed in my barn clothes, I headed outside, Brutus on my heels. The August sun beat down on me as I headed for the small two-horse barn. The deeper into summer we got, the earlier in the day the blistering heat arrived. I was just thankful that being nestled in the mountains of central Oregon meant the evenings were cool. The peaks also made for a beautiful backdrop that made me feel like I could breathe. I stopped for a moment, pausing to turn and really take in the landscape surrounding me. The snow-capped Monarch Mountains to the east and the golden faces of Castle Rock to the west. It was a breathtaking place to call home, even if it wasn't truly mine. Cope would hate it if he knew I thought that way. My brother had done everything he could to make me feel like this place was mine, from building a barn for whiskey and stardust to constructing a massive art studio beside the guest house to hold my pieces. A heavy weight leaned against my thigh, and I glanced down to take in my shadow. Brutus was 100 pounds of pure love, but would gladly take out someone's jugular at my command. My hand lowered to scratch his head. "Your breakfast is next, don't worry." Sweat already threatened to gather at the small of my back from the combination of the August heat and the thought of mucking out the stalls. If I was smart, I'd start earlier when it was more civilized. But a morning person, I was not. Because when sleep did manage to find me, I held on to it with everything I had. My girls greeted me with snorts and whinnies as I entered the barn. They were already waiting at their stall doors. They knew the drill. The routine was a balm to all of us, and I was grateful that I'd managed to find two mares who didn't begrudge my later start times. "Sorry I'm late," I said, as I ducked into the tack room that also housed their feed. Filling a bucket, I headed back out and down the aisle. I stopped at the first stall, bending to press my forehead to the dappled grays. Her coat was like a scattering of light and shadow. Some days it looked like the light would win, and others the shadow. It was the same sort of battle I felt warring inside me. I stayed there for a moment, soaking in the contact and the grounding sensation it gave me. Stardust stayed too, as if she sensed I needed extra today. Finally, I forced myself to straighten and poured half the grain into her bucket. I moved on to the buckskin. She was all tan body and dark mane, tail, and legs. I gave Whiskey a scratch between her ears the way she loved, relishing how she pressed into my hand, searching for more. The trust in that movement was the same gift it always was. I pulled my hand back and poured the rest of the feed into her bucket. My girls didn't wait, they dove right in, and I knew Whiskey would be begging for more in a matter of minutes. I wasn't wrong. A whinny sounded, and when I turned around, she blew air between her lips. I couldn't help the laugh that bubbled out of me as I grabbed a lead rope. Sliding the stall door open, I hooked it to her halter. You know treats are for the evenings or after a ride. You have to earn it. The mare snorted as if she understood every word I said. I led her into the pasture and then did the same with Stardust. I poured some kibble into a bowl for Brutus and got to work on my barn chores. An hour or so into mucking out and sweeping up, Brutus let out a bark. As I turned, he quivered next to me. Over the 7 years I'd had him, I'd learned to decipher his barks. There were warnings and alerts, but there were also happy ones, like this. Those that told me someone he loved was near. I wandered to the edge of the barn, my hand shielding my eyes to take in the figures climbing out of the familiar SUV. The moment Luca's feet hit the gravel, a wide grin on his 7-year-old face, I gave Brutus the command for release. Freigeben, I said, patting his massive gray booty. Brutus didn't wait. He bounded over to Luca, who crouched to get right up in the dog's face. Sutton laughed as she joined them, bending to give him all the rubs and whisper sweet nothings. They were effusive with their praise of my pup, and I wondered if he wished I were more like that. But our bond was a quiet one, built during endless days in my studio or on long walks and rides in the wilderness. Still, I hoped he knew how much I loved him, even if that love lived in the silence between us. A new flash of movement caught my eye as Cope slid from the SUV. He no longer moved as if every step was painful, but I didn't miss the strain around his eyes and mouth as his feet hit the ground. The urge to scream at him to stop moving was strong. The image of him in the hospital after a bullet had torn through his chest and collapsed a lung flashed in my mind. My hands fisted, fingernails biting into my palms. As the sting of pain flared, the image retreated, but not before Cope caught my look. Pain was back in his expression, but for a whole new reason now. Fucking hell. Cope forced a smile as he ruffled Luca's hair.
Why don't you and your mom go say goodbye to Whiskey and Stardust?
Luca pushed to his feet, sighing.
I'm gonna miss them. Think they've got horses in Seattle?
Sutton's expression softened. I'm sure they do, but I know what they definitely have. Luca gave her a wide smile, revealing his new permanent tooth growing in.
Hockey?
Luca was hockey-crazed, so it felt like destiny that his mom had fallen for my professional hockey-playing brother. As soon as Cope fully rehabbed his injury, the three of them would be surrounded by all things ice. Sutton laughed as Luca took off toward the pasture. She followed but stopped to give me a quick squeeze. I'm going to miss you. I'd gotten used to having her company and admired the hell out of her strength and tenacity. You'll be back before you know it. We will. Her gaze lifted to Cope. And this is important. I knew it was. Cope needed one more chance to play hockey his way, a healthier way, now that he had Sutton and Luca in his life. As Sutton followed her son into the barn, Cope made his way toward me. I grimaced at the way he still guarded his steps. Are you sure you should be doing this much walking around?
You've been avoiding me.
This was the new Cope. No hiding behind jokes and straight to the point. My hand dropped and my fingers found a loose thread on my jeans to twist. You've been busy. Cope pinned me with a droll stare.
Oh, yeah. Super busy, watching endless movies and doing my 100-yard walks every couple of hours.
I winced. I suck. He moved in closer, ducking his head so his dark blue eyes met mine.
Don't talk shit about my sister. Only I get to do that.
A half laugh, half scoff left my lips. Brings up stuff. You getting shot. It had stirred my ghosts and demons. Maybe that's why I'd overreacted to the poor guy at the gym this morning. Somehow, I doubted he'd keep his membership. Cope muttered a curse.
I'm sorry.
You asked to get shot? His lips twitched.
No.
Then don't be dumb. It's not your fault. But I like your egotistical ass, so I'd rather you not get dead. Think you can work on that? It took everything I had to make light of what had happened. an obsession that had turned deadly. Cope nodded.
Sutton's going to make sure I only have boring days ahead.
I heard that, she yelled from the pasture. This time I did laugh, and it helped. It released some of the tension that had been building in my chest. Cope turned his focus back to me.
You going to be okay?
I nodded. You know me, I like my alone time. Cope winced as his gaze pulled toward a vehicle in the distance. What? I asked, dread pooling in my stomach.
You won't be alone. Not exactly.
Explain, puck boy, I growled. Cope scrubbed a hand over his face and glanced back at the SUV getting closer.
You know Link, the owner of my team?
I nodded slowly. I knew of him, but hadn't actually met the man, even during the camp Cope had hosted in Sparrow Falls and in the aftermath of his attack.
He's been looking for a spot to build a vacation house.
Billionaires, I muttered. I might not have met Lincoln Pierce, but I'd heard plenty. Merciless when it came to protecting his various holdings, innovative when it came to his approach to business. And if what I'd been told was right, a bit paranoid about giving his trust. Cope pinned me with a hard stare.
He's not like that. Link's a good guy and is going through some stuff. So go easy on him.
That piqued my interest, but I didn't bite. I just eyed him warily and waited for him to explain. Cope sighed.
I told him he could stay at my place while Shep started the build.
You didn't. The look I sent my brother should have had him ducking for cover. I didn't do well with strangers, as evidenced by this morning's gym outing. The last thing I needed was someone to be awkward around when Cope wasn't here as a buffer.
It's only a few weeks here and there, just to crucial parts of the build. His life is in Seattle.
Cope protested. Unbelievable, I muttered, scowling at the approaching vehicle.
Could you try not to look like you're being tortured when you say hello?
Cope mumbled. I flipped him off. Strangers make me grumpy, you know that. Cope chuckled.
Yeah, he said you already almost killed him.
Everything in me stilled. The door to some overpriced SUV slammed, and my spine jerked straight at the sound. But more than that, at the sight. Those swirling hazel eyes, the thick, dark hair my fingers itched to run through, the jaw sharp enough to cut glass. Oh, hell no. One corner of that beautiful mouth kicked up.
Hey, vicious.
Four, Lincoln. I watched those perfect berry lips part in shock as I climbed out of my SUV, the mental dots connecting as I strode toward the woman who, through a process of elimination, I now knew was Arden. And then the heat settled in, that smoky flare of fire in her gray-violet eyes. Anger might have put it there, but that didn't make the burn any less beautiful to watch. You knew who I was, Arden accused. I held up both hands in mock surrender. Not at first. I was just going to the gym, one my good friend here always talks about. I glanced at Cope. Thanks for that, by the way. He tried to cover his laugh with a cough. Sorry. He snuck up on me, Arden defended. Cope pinned her with a stare I recognized, a big brother exasperated with his little sister. And how loud was your music? Pink hit the apples of Arden's cheeks, and it somehow made her look even more beautiful. Not that loud. Not sure it qualifies as music, I added. She glared in my direction, and Cope chuckled as he shook his head. Pierces your eardrums, huh? Like someone took an ice pick to my skull, I agreed. You two clearly have no taste. Arden turned to her brother. I need to get back to work, and you need to get off your feet. Cope's face twisted with a hint of annoyance. I'm fine. And I will be, too. She moved into his space, stretching up onto her tiptoes to press a kiss to his cheek. Be safe, please. I like you in one piece. I'll do my best, Cope said. But you might want to know something first. What's that? You gave the other half of your house to the starting line of Seattle's football team? Arden called, walking backward away from us both. Sutton's going to marry me. It was like some invisible force hit Arden, causing joy to slide over her features. But it was joy laced with pain, and I couldn't figure out where the pain had come from. You're going to have a beautiful life, Kopi, she called and then turned, jogging away, her giant dog trailing behind her. I couldn't take my eyes off her as she headed toward what I assumed was her art studio. Cope never shut up about the sister who lived in the guest house on his property and made captivating art that people clamored over. But he'd conveniently left out the fact that she was the most stunning human being on the planet, figured. Finally, I forced my gaze away from where she'd disappeared and glanced back at my friend. Big news, huh, Copy? Oh, fuck off, he muttered. I chuckled. Seriously, I'm happy for you, man. You more than deserve this. Cope's gaze moved from me to the pasture that currently held the two people he loved most in this world. I didn't always believe that, but thanks to Sutton, I'm starting to. Hell, if that didn't hit me right in the solar plexus. I honestly wasn't sure I'd ever known a love with the power to create change like that. I loved my little sister Ellie fiercely, but it was a protective love. My mom had done her best, but the tyrant who ran our household had crushed her spirit over the years. The beautiful memories I had of her were coated in an acid that made them hard to endure. And the man I should have called Dad sure as hell didn't love anyone but himself. Link, you okay? I blinked a few times to clear away the memories that felt like a combination of smoky tendrils I couldn't quite grasp and shards of glass I couldn't clear away fast enough. I'm good. Just happy you found this. His expression eased a fraction. Then maybe that will put you in a good enough mood to do me a favor. Cope, you're letting me stay in your house while I work on building mine. I'll do whatever you need. The moment he'd offered up his stunning mountain oasis, I'd jumped at the chance. Not that I couldn't afford to rent something while we got the project started, but whatever I found wouldn't be this close to the Siren's orbit. Cope paused for a moment, as if choosing his words carefully. Watch out for Arden while I'm gone. Tension wove its way around my muscles, tightening every strand of sinew. She in some sort of trouble? Between the knife this morning, the hulking guard dog, and Cope's request, I didn't have a good feeling. No, he said quickly. It's not like that. My getting shot was hard on her. I wouldn't mind someone being around for a while. Everything started to fall into place. Her need to protect herself, being extra jumpy, but something still niggled. A piece of the puzzle didn't fit, and I wanted to figure it out. Only the desire was bordering on need at this point. Of course, I'll make sure she has my number, too, just in case. Thanks, man, Cope said, one corner of his mouth kicking up. Try not to get stabbed, though. You just worry about getting my star player back on the ice, I shot back. But it was so much more than that. I wanted my best friend to truly heal. Yeah, yeah, Cope muttered. I think you've still got a little scab right there for my little sister kicking your ass. I couldn't help but laugh. Thanks for the reminder. I started heading toward the art studio as Sutton and Luca ducked through the fence rails. Travel safe. Thanks for letting us use your plane, he called back. Anytime. I turned, moving with a single-minded focus now. The guest house and studio perfectly complemented the main house with their mixture of reddish wood, stone, and glass. The design made me eager to work with Cope's brother, Shep, who had executed the builds here. But I couldn't stay focused on that, the properties I'd be viewing tomorrow, or the meeting with Shep to talk about the design, because my mind wouldn't let go of thoughts of the woman with the haunted eyes. The walking juxtaposition, hard and soft, quiet and loud, light and dark. Those opposites in one human being tugged at me and made me want to know how both resided so fully in one person. But more than that, it made me want to know why. As I rounded the guest house, a retro truck came into view. A red Ford F-150, likely dating back to somewhere in the late 70s. The paint job was rusted in spots, and there were more than a few dings, but it somehow only gave the vehicle more character, and I only became more intrigued with its owner. I walked up the workshop steps, and as I lifted my hand to knock, I noticed a camera tucked into the eaves. Interesting. I knew Cope had plenty of security on his property, so it made sense for him to extend that to his sister's place. Still, something gnawed at me. Something didn't quite fit. My knuckles connected with the door three times. There was no answer. Nothing but angry strains of music from within the space. This time I tried the doorbell. I thought I heard a deep woof from inside, and then the music cut off. I waited, some phantom energy starting to buzz through my muscles. The door flew open, and I was met with an adorable scowl. Yes? Something about her expression only made me want to grin more. Wanted to give you my number. The violet in those siren's eyes flashed brighter.
Why would I need that?
Oh, I don't know, in case you want me to kill a spider, or fight off an axe murderer. Arden let out a sound somewhere between a laugh and a scoff.
I relocate the spiders outside, and if an axe murderer shows up, I'm offering you up as a sacrifice.
I only smiled wider. You're brutal. She lifted a shoulder and then let it drop.
The truth hurts.
I slid a card out of my wallet and handed it to her. In case you want to give me over to any axe murderers, or need help with your horses or something. Arden arched a dark brow.
You a secret cowboy?
I chuckled. You never know. Either way, I'm good with grunt labor. Arden tapped the card against her thigh.
I'll keep that in mind.
When I made no move to leave, she sighed.
What else do you need, Lincoln?
Hell. The way she said my name. There was a slight grit to her voice, a realness I couldn't get enough of. You mean, besides medical treatment for my eventful morning? I asked, amusement lacing the words. Arden's cheeks flushed pink, and fuck, it made her look even more beautiful. I wanted to follow that blush and see what I could do to make it spread.
You won't sneak up on me next time,
she shot back. My gaze flicked from her to the dog behind her and back again. Definitely not. Arden didn't look away, and our gazes locked, held.
Lincoln,
Link, I corrected. My friends call me Link.
And me almost impaling you on my switchblade makes us besties?
She asked. I fought the smile that wanted to stretch across my face. We've definitely got a bond. My fingers lifted to touch the tiny scab on my neck, cemented in blood. The blush disappeared from her face in a flash, her skin taking on an almost gray hue. I muttered a curse. Sorry. Squeamish around blood.
Something like that,
she muttered, taking a step back.
What do you really want, Link? I'm working.
The moment she uttered my nickname, I found I missed the sound of the full thing on her lips, the way her tongue caressed each syllable. I cleared my throat, trying to get a hold of myself. I wanted to see about buying one of your pieces. Surprise lit in those hypnotizing eyes.
You know my art?
Is that really so surprising? You've built quite a name for yourself, and your brother won't shut up about how talented you are. I looked up your site a while ago, been meaning to reach out about an acquisition. That wasn't the entire truth. It had started as simple curiosity and then grew into an obsession. Her artwork was like nothing I'd ever seen, haunting and captivating.